Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
Hey, Al Cheaters, welcome to the Always Cheating Podcast. My name is Josh. We're here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Josh, I've just got a lot going on in my head right now. We are here to do a postmortem on what is the longest fantasy season in Premier League history. 13 plus any sport, right? Has a cricket game gone on for 13 months? Maybe. I'm not sure. But this has just been, it is the old cliche, right, is it's a marathon and not a sprint. And the 2019-2020 season really put that cliche to the test. So we've got a lot to unpack here. What did we learn? What were our high points, low points, etc.? So let's get going here, Josh.
Yeah, two opening questions, Brandon. One is, what felt longer to you, the 3 months of pandemic-inspired closures or the one game week that was stretched out over two game weeks? Which one felt longer to you in hindsight?
The 3 months off from the Premier League was so long. And the way I think about it being long is less what we did during those 3 months and the fact that there was no football happening. But putting it in perspective, six or seven months prior to that cutoff for lockdown seemed like a lifetime ago. And to think about what happened up through game week 29 feels like a blip when I'm looking back at it. And when we post the new podcast every week, it's a quick way for me to look back at all the episodes from the season and how many downloads we're getting and all of that. And I can barely remember the game week 29 goings on. And then game weeks 30 plus through 38 plus were just like a smash cut. Like, you might be wondering how I got here.
Yeah, in hindsight, it does feel like it went by super quickly, didn't it? I mean, I suppose it did. I mean, they compressed, what was it, 9 game weeks into about 5 weeks or so, 5 or 6 weeks. It was, it was great. It was great while it lasted, especially in the U.S. I am like most people in America, people who are lucky enough to do it, I guess I should say. I've been working from home, and I also have a daughter, and so for me, it's a mix of like childcare and working from home. And so having just like something fun on like almost every day for 6 weeks. And I'm sure even if you don't have kids, like it broke up the day a little bit. I'd record the match or, if it was like a one match on that day and I'd watch it, around 5 o'clock. And it was just fun to have something, there's no sports right now in America, basically. There's like golf, and that's pretty much it.
That's the healthy way to look at it. I think the other way to spin it is, the whole trick, the parenting trick, is if you catch your kid smoking a cigarette, you buy them a pack and you sit them down and you're like, okay, now you have to smoke the entire pack right now and I'm going to watch you do it. Yeah. And that was a little bit like cramming the 8 game weeks into such a short amount of time. It was like the Premier League was like, oh, you like football that much? Okay, let's see if you can handle this. So I do feel like I just smoked an entire pack of cigarettes in an hour.
That's true. And there were highs and lows for sure. I think that game week 38, though, which was a traditional final game week where they played all 10 matches at once, that was so fun and so exciting that it kind of washed a little bit of that, like, am I diluting the product here a little bit feeling? Because it was so great, right? I mean, is it the best game week 38 you can remember, like in the last 10 years?
I genuinely
a cut above.
I genuinely think so. It delivered on drama. I mean, certainly at the relegation race. I mean, just to see what Watford was attempting to do against Arsenal against all odds, and then the Villa West Ham match. It was delightful, and even the Leicester Manchester United match was interesting. Man City Norwich was just like fantasy manna from heaven. It was a meaningless match, but it was,
yeah.
Because we'll sort out our teams in a moment, but we both had Mahrez going into that match, and it was the perfect blend of delight and disappointment. The Mahrez thing of like, oh, he doesn't start, but Norwich is so bad. I have belief. Of course, he comes on and he gets a goal and an assist. So everyone, I feel like most people, though my heart would go out to anyone, you know, Ben Madison, if you're out there listening, who let their mini league lead slip away. Beyond that, I feel like everyone had to leave game week 38 relatively happy.
It was, I think, you know, and there's a question here from Chica Fernandez. I'm going to read off in a second here, but it was peak team sheet leak, like whatever you want to call it, deadline gate, Brandon, let's just call it that. Okay. And Chica Fernandez says, please do give us your dream game week deadline timing/team leak scenario for FPL moving forward. So as everyone knows, the fantasy deadline is 1 hour before the first match of the game week kicks off. Mm-hmm. And what has been happening with increasing frequency over the last few months are that we have been seeing team sheet leaks about 15 minutes for the first match of the day. And it has become such a phenomenon led by FPL Rockstar and then for others from there that basically people were just waiting until there are 15 minutes left to make any transfers. It was sort of this crippling, you know, fear of like, well, I don't want to commit to anything if I'm going to get a leak. And obviously in game week 38, where, you know, in theory, every single team sheet was available for leaks. And so you weren't a free hit. So how did you, before I even answer the question, how were you feeling about the leaks, you know, going into it with, in theory, every player available to you?
Well, yeah, on the free hit and all the team sheets coming out at exactly the same time, 38, I was very pro leak because it would do nothing but help me. And I think a lot of in the know accounts, because there was a lot of dust up about team sheets leaking as they were trying to keep more of a low profile, it seemed. So you weren't really getting many leaks apart from this cryptic Liverpool team sheet, which was like absolute FPL genocide.
It was such a weird team that it almost had to be real, didn't it? You know, there was something about it where you're like, this is so strange, it must be true.
I agree. And at that point I had gotten Trent into my free hit, and so it was an easy sideways move to Robertson, and I had already committed to going without Liverpool mid, so it didn't shake me up too much. But as I had mentioned, my biggest issue with Mahrez, and my overall rank was not where I wanted to be. I was around 290K going into game week 38. I was like very much of the mind of let's just go for some high powered differentials. So I brought Mahrez in. I think he was like,
upside picks, Brennan.
Yeah, upside picks, precisely, my friend. lowish, not, comparatively lower ownership players that had high upside, and Mahrez, you know, has that attacking potential. He hadn't started the last two or three matches, I can't remember precisely, right for the start. He was the only miss in my free hit. Now, I mean, there were other misses in terms of bringing in the wrong player, but they all started except for Mahrez. If I had a Manchester City team sheet leak just prior to it, of course it would have saved me, but this is not how I'm used to playing FPL. I remember playing a all-out attack chip a couple seasons ago, and I remember sitting on the toilet doing my morning business before I head out the door to go to that was probably too much information, Josh. I apologize for that. But before I head out the door to go to the Black Horse, but it reminds me of that scene in Breaking Bad where who's the brother-in-law or the brother?
He
discovers that Walt is actually Heisenberg. You know, when he's out sitting on the toilet reading that Walt Whitman book, and I see Ozil isn't starting, and it blows up my all-out attack. Worthless chip anyway. My point is, this is just what I understand fantasy to be, is you win some, you lose some. And
right.
I think I can see Chico Fernandez's question here. He's asking, please do give us your dream game week deadline, timing, team league scenario, or lack thereof for FPL moving forward. And for me, it's you either it's one of two extremes, right? Either it's a simple fix if you're the Premier League, is you just say to FPL, no longer is your first deadline an hour before the first team sheet comes out. It's 2 hours. Now, I mean, you could get team sheet leaks 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, and so on before the FPL deadline, but it becomes harder and harder to get those
increasingly
leaks,
unlikely.
Yeah, sure. Right. Yeah. So I'm fine with that fix where you just say move the deadline up so it's farther away from the actual team sheet news. Or you have to go the complete opposite direction where you do what the Fantasy Bundesliga site does, where your lineup is malleable through the entire game week.
Yeah, or just that, like, up until the first kickoff, you know, you can make your transfers, because I think and that's also what basically every other fantasy league does too. I think the Fantasy Premier League game is sort of alone in sort of forcing you to guess a little bit about, you know, who's going to be out there just in that first one, obviously. I mean, you know, it's not like you can make transfers in the Bundesliga game 2 days later if there's a match on Monday or whatever.
Yeah, right. It's true.
You know. So I just think I think in the era of like pretty serious squad depth and a lot of rotation and Champions League, and, you know, especially, you know, this summer we saw obviously a more extreme version of this, but, you know, I just think, I don't know, I you know, and there's an argument that, like, for people in Australia, even the United States and the West Coast, you know, it's pretty tricky. You know, I was setting alarms at like 6:15, you know, so I could wake up on a Saturday and get that leaked team sheet, you know, and make any changes if I had to. I wouldn't typically hold my transfer that long because it's just too nerve wracking, but maybe I'd move a captain around or something like that. You know, like it's just too risky on a Friday night to go to bed and be like, you know what, if I miss this alarm, I'm not gonna be able to make my transfer this week. So, but I think, like, if you go 2 hours, then it's like, is that just getting like absurd? You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Where it's like 2, 3, 7 hours, 12 hours, you know, it's like, how long do you wait, you know, to,
That's
to cut off the deadline.
I think at the end of the day, it's a lot of Sturm und Drang, right? It's just it's just hand-wringing for just usually one, maybe half of the first kickoffs throughout the season have true fantasy implications. Now, half, maybe that's a lot, but honestly, it's often just one team sheet we're talking about. And if the Premier League has issues with leaks, well, that's not my problem. That's the Premier League's problem. So stop yelling at me. Figure it out.
Yeah. Just give everybody an hour. I think it's just, I mean, give everybody an hour after the team sheets go out. Like, I know that may inconvenience people elsewhere, but it's like, then everyone has the same information. And then there's no sneaking around. There's no, you know, I heard from somebody who heard from somebody. That's still going to happen for the later games. But I think for this first one, it's just give everybody an hour. If you're on the West Coast, it doesn't mean, you know, at least you don't have to wake up in a 15-minute window, right? I mean, if these leaks are going to be a thing that we see just increasingly, which I don't know why they wouldn't be, then it's a 15-minute window. If you just allow it up until 1 minute before the deadline, then everybody at least has an hour-long window where they can log in and see the team sheets. And that just seems like the more reasonable way. Otherwise, it's like, do you make it an 8-hour deadline? Like, how long do you, you know, like, two, I don't know. 1 hour is like, feels clean. 2 hours starts to feel like, it's just silly. Like, you're just adjusting for, you know, for cheaters, basically. Yeah. We're always cheating, Brandon, but, you know,
it's on brand. But we're also always forever going to be dealing with these things. I mean, you say deadline gate here, and I can think of Aguero gate. You remember when, that Man City account would say, well, Aguero is not going to play tomorrow, and lots of people dropped him, and then he turned out to start and score a brace, if not a hat trick, I don't remember correctly. Yeah. But we will forever leak team sheets, injury speculation, Instagram photos from training sessions. We will forever be speculating about this, and actually, that's fun. That is something fun for us to talk about on the internet when we've got nothing else going on a Friday night. So, you know, embrace a bit of the chaos.
Okay. I think either one of the solutions is fine. I do think the 1 hour thing has just led to like the rise of these like fake in the nose. These people I feel like it's become this kind of epidemic. It's more of a social media thing, but it's just like all of these people just posting any like just making team cheats up, right? And then just posting them in the hope that they get like a bunch of followers. And it's just it all feels very tedious, you know. And I'm just like, just give us the teams. You know, just want to see the stupid teams. Give me a break. I'll be sneaking around like this, trying to like decide whether an account is actually in the know or not. It's like, just let us see the teams. We can adjust accordingly. It's a 1 hour window. Everybody can see it. It would be fine. It would be completely fine. And like, if that means the site doesn't update until 20 minutes in the first match, that's fine anyways. Who's looking at teams 20 minutes in? You know, it's so anyway.
All right, Josh, we've got a Manscaped ad coming up. We can't talk about team sheet deadlines forever. Okay.
All right. Let's move on from here then. We actually watched game week 38 together. So it was thank you to JS for coming over and bringing some Prosecco. We were on my roof. Amazingly it worked pretty well, even though it was like 90 degrees outside.
Thanks for hosting us, Josh. It was a delight to be able to watch these matches with friends and do it safely in the open air with proper distance. And
you've signaled your virtue accordingly. And I did also wear a shirt that we got from our friend Sam Danby, and damn if that thing didn't fit perfectly. It was so what a great thing when you get a free t-shirt from somebody that actually fits perfectly.
It's a dream.
Yeah. So thank you to Sam. All right, so leagues, always cheating Super League. We've waited long enough, Brandon. The top 10 in the Always Cheating Super League. How about I'll read out the top 10 for the Always Cheating Super League, and you read out the top 10 for the Patreon Supporters League, which is coming up in a second here.
Brilliant, yeah.
All right. In 10th, Declan Ryan, Wesley Crushers. Am I going name or am I going? I'm just going to go name. Okay. In 9th is amazing that after 200 episodes, I still haven't decided which. I don't know. Let's just make it up again. In 9th is Graham Wilshaw. In 8th is Martin Jansen. 7th is Jules Lefebvre. 6th is Sean Clark. 5th is Tom Petchy. In 4th, Alex Nielsen. And Brandon, we come to the top 3 now. In 3rd, Hugh Patrick Campbell. In 2nd, Mite Winterskog. I have to actually open up my Malti Winterskog is in 2nd. I had to do a little control plus there, Brandon. And in 1st, I think he finished 37th overall.
I think it was 39th today. Actually. But was it in the ballpark 39th? Yeah.
In the 30s, certainly. Sent us a nice note today. Congratulations to Aller at Me, Alex Coates. Congratulations, Alex. And Alex, I actually have forgotten to post about this, but an account called FPL Trophy sent me a Always Cheating Manager of the Season Award. It's a nice little trophy, and I'll share a picture of it on social media. Alex, I will send that to you in the mail, a Manager of the Season Award. So, Alex, hit us up, DM us, and give us your address, and doesn't matter where you are, we'll send it out to you. Congratulations. Congratulations to everybody. I think I may have cracked the top 2000 or something like that, Brandon. Maybe the top 3000. It's the League of Leagues, as we all know.
There are more than 10,000 managers in the Super League, and I like to say it's never too late to join, but the season is over, so we have reached the point where it is too late to join. But we will reboot. We will reboot the Super League as we do every season next season, so you'll be auto renewed to be back in the Super League. And if you're not already in there, we'll see you next season. Josh, now is the time where we usually plug our Patreon, let's do it. You can still support the juice. Actually, this is the best time to become a Patreon supporter because Josh and I have just finished 13 straight months of FPL podcasting. And if you want to just say thanks for what we do, pay us a visit at patreon.com/always cheating. What do you get when you're there? Well, you get an extra podcast every week, exclusive prize leagues, and access to our Slack where Josh and I and all of our friends talk about FPL strategy. The bonus podcasts are going to take a bit of a hiatus before we get into season preview content for next season.
Yes. I would expect.
Yeah, virtually no time off for the Wicked. Big thanks to our new Patreon subscribers who are doing just that, thanking us here at the end of the season at the Volkswagen level. You get a t-shirt at the Volkswagen level. Thanks to Jason Walker. And at the Lord Sorloth tier, Jan Horvat and Harold H., big thanks to you. And once again, thanks to everyone who has supported us on Patreon throughout this season. It really genuinely does help keep Josh and I motivated and just financially keep the servers up and running. So it's appreciated. Now let's get to the always cheating Patreon Super League, the Patreon Supporters League, and give these people their due. I'll read out your names. You were finished in the top 10. Matt Seward in 10th place, 9th place, it's Mike DiPietro. Producer Mike, congrats on a great season. Jeff Turner in 8th, Isaac Enskog in 7th, and 6th place, it's Tu Lumbee. In 5th, Francis Mahone, FPL Ant. Nick Snyers in 4th, 3rd place, Ben Robinson. Jonathan DeSimone in 2nd place. And our winner in the Patreon Supporters League is Hugh Patrick Campbell. Hugh, I just sent you an email saying you now have your pick of anything in the Always Cheating digital shop, online shop. The merchandise is physical, not digital.
It's like the end of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, exactly. You win.
It's all open. You win nothing. No, in the end, he wins everything, right?
Yeah, precisely. Okay, so that's the housekeeping. Let's take a quick break, Josh. We'll come back and give our final thoughts on the 2019-20 season.
I do like that I added right at the end there. Like I didn't know what happened at the end of Charlie. I'm talking about he wins everything, right? Is that what happens at the end of one of the most famous children's stories of all time? All right. As you said, let's take a break and we'll get back with our final thoughts on the 2019-20 season.
Right. Support for the Always Cheating Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you with the best tools for your grooming experience. Josh, it's summer, it's hot. It's like, to stay cool and sweat-free and also well-groomed, it's a challenge. You know, in quarantine, everyone has been talking about, I really need a haircut. People are obsessed with haircuts. I don't hear enough people talking about what's going on down there. And what are you doing to take care of your bits during this hot summer, this crazy time? So that's where Manscaped comes in. And I have been keeping myself clean down there. And when it's hot in my apartment, I feel fresher, I feel looser, and I also feel less of a gross guy just being near my wife.
Sure. Disgusting person.
Exactly. and what's made it easier, like Manscaped sent me their Lawnmower 3.0 to try, and they have redesigned this electric trimmer. They spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created. Here are the specs, Josh. It's a third generation trimmer with a cutting edge ceramic blade. And when I get down there, it's beautiful to know that this is a ceramic blade, not some crazy rusty metal bit that's spinning at a billion miles per hour. It gives me that added comfort. And when I tell you it's premium, Josh, it is premium. Even the battery, it lasts up to 90 minutes. So just kick back, relax, take as much time as you want. You can even take your time in the shower because the Lawnmower 3.0 is water resistant. And it's got this LED light on the front, Josh. So if you're having trouble getting light down there in the in-between.
Sure.
Lawnmower 3.0, it's got you covered. When you order this bad boy too, you get a charging stand, so you know where to store it, and you also know that it already has that charge for you. And if you're listening to me speak right now and this is striking some sort of note with you, and this is not a fun thing to talk about, just like male grooming, but if you have an
inkling... Sounds like you're having fun, I have to be honest, but let's continue.
Let's just go there. It's not a big deal to just try it out. So trim that junk of yours, and to make it less hassle-free, if you are a listener of Always Cheating, go to manscaped.com and use the code CHEATING to get 20% off and free shipping on this Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0. Grooming down there, something you may not have considered, but it's summer, it's hot, you're locked in your apartment. This is the perfect time to experiment. So yeah, get 20% off and free shipping with the code CHEATING at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping. I'll say it again. Go to manscaped.com and use the promo code CHEATING.
All right, Brendan, we're back. Final thoughts on the 2019-20 season. I've sort of grouped these a little bit, kind of like big picture, and then moving into a little bit of player talk and a little bit of looking ahead. So that's, if you're looking for a theme for these questions, that's how I've sorted it's them.
More concise than that, Josh.
Thank you. So the first question is from Shiv, and he says, what were your highlights from the season? So you want to just give me one highlight, Brendan? You have one highlight from the season?
It's a bit of recency bias, but Troy Deeney scoring a brace of penalties when it was, you know, it could have easily been one of the stupidest FPL transfers I've ever made. I mean, going in on a dire Watford team who was relegation bound and they're, did you see this post-match interview with Troy Deeney after the Arsenal match where the guy is like, could this be your last game ever? And Troy looks up at the interviewer and he's like, I'm not that old, you cheeky bastard.
No, I didn't see that. It's funny.
I think too, game week one was one of my better scores. And that was game week one is such a hard week to play, right? Because so when we do the postmortem here of the season, it's interesting because we've learned so much from players, teams, form, strategy that is applicable to this season. And as we bid adieu to this season, all of that knowledge is vanishing. It's disappearing. And we start virtually from scratch. I mean, obviously, we will still know that Kevin De Bruyne is a great player. We don't lose that information. So game week one can be super hard because in many respects you're starting from scratch. And I had just like a great array of picks that went right for me, like John McGinn, who was one of those unproven in the Premier League upside picks who immediately scores against Spurs. And then I also had Kane in that game who got a brace at the death. And that put me, I think, up to 98 points that week. And it was like those undeserved great game weeks are what I live for. And I think that was probably tops for me.
Yeah, that's, I think that, I mean, I had the first two game weeks were my best as well. I mean, I was 51K after game week two. That was the game week. It was a 2 week span that were the highlights and lowlights of the season for me. I brought in Timo Pukki with my one free transfer, and Timo Pukki scored a hat trick at home to versus Newcastle. And I felt like an absolute genius. Like I had cracked the code of fantasy. And then what do you do when you do well, Brendan? Do you learn from success or from failure, Brendan?
What you do is you get cocky. That's what happens.
You learn. You do not learn from success. Success goes to everybody's head. It is so dangerous having even like the slightest taste of success. So I decided 50K overall, amazing start of the season. I decide I am going to double down on how good this is going by wildcarding. I'm going to wildcard out a bunch of the players who just got me 50K overall because I felt like I had beat the system and that it wasn't going to last and that I needed to set myself up for the long term. Immediately dropped 200,000 spots. Then I drop another 100,000 spots. And then I drop to 1.2 million from 51K. So by game week five, I'm at 1.2 million overall, a 1.15 million drop in four game weeks. And it was honestly a kind of my season was never the same after that. And I think that I was sort of a little I don't know. I couldn't quite shake it off, you know, this feeling that I'd kind of blown it. And unfortunately it was a 13-month season, so that feeling has lasted for a long time. it's really is true. I mean, I was sort of joking a second ago, but it's like, I don't think I played this season very humbly You know, like I think that I there were lots of opportunities where I could have made a smart move and brought in somebody who would have netted me 4 points, you know, 4 points here, 4 points there. And there were just way too many, like, you know, which is like the real way to win at this game. You know, I mean, you have to like pick your spots and be aggressive sometimes, but I feel like I didn't like get the, I mean, this is sounding very poker, you know, ish, but like, I just feel like I didn't have my fundamentals down this year, you know? And I feel like I didn't play fundamentally sound like at any point. And so I was just swinging all over the place. I mean, I got up to 1.2 million. And then in game week 21, I was back down to 31,000. And then, you know, a few weeks later, I'm up to 140,000. And in the end, I finished at 77,000, which is a, you know, very respectable finish. But I, you know, it just felt like, I felt like I didn't have any like control over my season, you know, like it was all kind of like, just like, it was like, I was just like batting down the hatches or whatever, you know. Yeah. It was like I was just constantly like just trying to like keep it all, you know, keep all the plates spinning or whatever.
I think I know what you mean. I think my, to pin down my issue with my team this season, it was not that I didn't have control or was trying to find control and not gaining it. I just gave up control to the game, and this was probably my most passive season that I've ever played, and it's the worst overall score that I've had since I started playing in 2011, around 286K. Absolute miserable rank for personal goals that I would be setting for myself. And when I look back at what went wrong, it was rarely is it an individual or a player that did you dirty. It's usually a strategy. I think I talked about this at the end of last season, that it's, this was a debate that was going on social media. Is FPL skill or is it luck? Or what percentage is it skill or what percentage is it luck? And what we talked about at the end of last season is it's not skill and luck. It's systems and moments. And what you have to do, this is something I picked up from, it's like a managerial tactic. Your job as a manager is to create a system. And you'd send your team out there with a system with the hope that that system invites moments to happen. And those are the moments that are transformative, that really make your team great or make your season great. And I was too passive. I didn't create a system for my team. And when you wonder where your moments are, often those moments don't come because you haven't put enough effort into the system. And that'll be my goal going into next season, is to be more rigorous in setting up a system that I'm playing. It doesn't have to be from game week 1 to 38, the same system that you play. You can be malleable, but to have that idea in your mind. And that's something that I totally missed.
Yeah. And, you know, I was talking about how I feel like I sort of picked up the wrong lessons from success. I mean, part of it was, you know, those first two game weeks, but also last season I had, and both of us, I had my best ever finish, as did you. Yeah. And you know, I, for me, that made me feel like I, was just kind of smarter than, I didn't need to like play fundamentally sound, you know, that I could just make like crazy transfers and then, you know, then having the Pookie thing come off, you're like, oh, like I'll never get anything wrong ever again, you know?
Yeah, right. You're plugged into the matrix at that point. You're just seeing binary code and you're like, I know Kung Fu. Yeah.
And so do you think that there was, was there a lesson you learned? Because you finished 10K last season. Is there anything, you know, is there a lesson that you learned from that, like, or do you think you took the wrong lesson from it, or that was just like a complete like clean slate and you just didn't really carry over anything, you know, from one season to the next?
I think your point is correct about hubris, and it's hard for me to look in the mirror, Josh, for many reasons, but it's rare that it's rare that I level against myself, that I I'm not humble enough or that I'm overconfident. These are things that I rarely associate with myself. But I think it is true. It's not that I came into this season after a really my strongest finish last season and thought, well, I don't really have to put in the work because this comes naturally to me. But ultimately, I think that was somewhere in the recesses of my brain. I think that's why I played a little bit more passively, because I had more faith than was warranted at just run-of-the-mill decisions that I was making, or I just didn't put in the work.
Now we're getting somewhere, you know, like I think that might be something too, where it's like you sort of like, yeah, it's like, I sort of expressed it like not taking advice from other people, but I think not putting the work is, it's kind of the same thing, right? Because like putting the work is like, you know, it's just like kind of paying attention to what people are saying, you know?
Precisely. And I think this is a good point with regard to messages that we're getting from people who listen to Always Cheating. It's the end of the season, particularly from our Patreon members and the other people who just follow us on social or just listen to the pod. They reach out and say, I just started listening to the pod this season and wow, I've had like a really great finish or my best ever finish. And
yeah.
I hope that listening to me and Josh talk about fantasy does genuinely help. But I think what these listeners are experiencing is that they actually put in the work this season. And part of putting in the work is listening. And when you listen, it's less you're doing what other people are telling you. But listening or paying attention gives you tools to do your own work and to generate your own thought process, to generate your own system. So I think I would just encourage everyone out there listening who was disappointed with their finish. Like fantasy is fun. So it could be fun to put in a little more work. And I think that's why we're here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it is fun. You know, we had Tom Campbell on the pod a couple weeks ago, a long time, you know, sort of, you know, a fantasy friend. He became a real life, which I guess is actually in some ways what it's all about, right? It's like if he's a friend in fantasy who became someone that we genuinely like, and he's our friend. And like, you know, we, and so we were chatting before the match started, and we were talking about how all three of us have been like investing more in our mini leagues because it's just, that's what makes it fun. And I think sometimes like this, you know, overall rank stuff that we've talked about before, it's just like a little, I don't know. Like, I mean, this is sort of like a little separate from what you were talking about, but I think, I don't know. I forgot.
I can pick up the thread. I think it's hard to judge a good season from a bad season. And I don't know what's the right thing to focus on at this point. Am I just focusing on how I played the game because I'm disappointed in my overall rank finish? Maybe I had fun. Maybe you did decently in your mini league or something like that. I don't know. And the desire to judge your fellow FPL managers on their overall rank can feel harsh sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's where the mini league comes in, where you're setting this could be a goal for you next season, is to set different stakes for you. It's like less that I want this OR. It's like, I want to beat this rival, or I want to finish at this level in my mini league. Because if you're trying to find a target in an overall rank where you've got more than 7 million managers, to try and identify a specific target there is tricky. But if you're in a work league with 50 other people and you've never finished in the top half of the table, that is a much more compelling goal, I think, to set at the start of a new season, is I'm going to finish in the top half, or I'm just going to win this bloody league, because that's something that is more achievable than saying, well, I'm going to finish between 100 and 150K or in the top 50K, et cetera.
Yeah, those just don't seem like goals that like would motivate me, you know, like an overall rank goal like that. I mean, sure, like you said, like if your goal is I'm going to win fantasy, I'm just going to win the whole game this year. That is a goal. But a range like that, it doesn't feel like it's, you know, motivated enough. And yeah, I think, I mean, this is all part of that like make fantasy fun again thing that we've talked about the last couple pods. And I think and we have some ideas, you and I were talking even before this podcast about things that we can do, you know, to make sure that we're having fun and not getting into sort of bad habits of just like suffering, you know. It's so like, it's
okay, Yoda, it's suffering.
Well, yeah, but I just mean like it's so but I just feel like it's so silly. Like there are moments where you almost have like a meta feeling in your head where like you're watching this and you're like, yeah, I know this is a game. It's like, I know this is a game. I know, like, even if I won every cash league I was in, like, it's still like, you know, it's like rent, you know, it's like, it's not that much money, right? It's like, you know, it's not nothing, but it's like, it's not going to like, you know, it's not like you're going to like buy a house, you know, from your fantasy winnings or whatever, you know, unless you're like,
I thought for a second you were comparing FPL to the hit Broadway show Rent, but I figured it out at that point.
Yeah. So you're like, well, it's not that much. It's not about the money. It's, you know, it's the competitiveness. You want to beat your people. And it's like, you sort of meta know that all this stuff isn't that important. And yet you still find yourself like feeling like real, like anger, like actual, like, I mean, mm-hmm. if I don't know if anger is the right word, frustration, whatever you want to call it. And yeah. you're like, I know I shouldn't be feeling this way. I know this is silly, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't mind having a little bit of that. I think that's part of the fun. If you're going to celebrate, I think it's hard to celebrate the good stuff without also suffering a little bit when things go badly. And I think a little bit of that is fine as long as it's, as long as it goes away when the match is over or whatever, you know? But I think sometimes I spin a little too far in the negative, and I really am trying to cut that out going into next season, at least a
Josh,
little bit.
Let me paint a picture for you. So, I got out of bed. So the kickoffs for us were 11 a.m. for game week 38. I had the yep. aim of getting out of bed far earlier than this, but I was up late playing Ghosts of Tsushima, if anybody out there is playing okay. this wonderful video game set in feudal Japan. So I had to sleep in. So my wife rustles me out of bed. She's like, it's like 9:55, 10 o'clock. You've got to get out of bed because you need to eat some breakfast before you go hang out with your friends
yeah.
and probably drink and sit in the sun. So yeah. I'm like, but I can't get out of bed because I'm refreshing Twitter to look at these team sheets. And she's like, you can yeah. do that while you eat breakfast with me. So that, and I'm like, fair point. So I go and I sit at the yeah. dining room table with Lilo, my wife, and it was like I just received a text message saying my cover had been blown or that, like, you know, my dog died when I see that yeah. Mara's is on the bench. And I go from being like, yeah, yeah, wife this, wife that. And then it's suddenly like, I've got to go. It's like I put on my fedora cap and my trench coat and I'm like, I've got to go.
Your bindle.
Yeah, it was bad. It was so bad the way my mood immediately changed. And if there's any way we can figure out how to combat that, let's do it.
Yeah. And a great double down because I hadn't seen it. The game hadn't updated yet. And so I hadn't heard from you. And I didn't know you'd Captain Mars. I didn't know you didn't have him in your fantasy team. And I was like, where the f*** are you, dude? I was like, when are you going to leave?
We don't have time for this.
Like, I was like, I'm not running down to grab you once this game starts. But had I known about the Mares news, mm-hmm. you know, that would have been a totally different tone.
It delayed me. I was very scattered on that bike ride over to your apartment. It's true. Sure. All right, let's move on. What's the next question,
yeah,
Josh?
Yeah. Yeah, let's do it. Just the 27 minutes on that question. G Soul said, there's actually two that are kind of aligned here. G Soul said, compared to previous years, are you having different post-FPL feelings, considering we've been through this extreme pile of matches during the summer, and us with the upcoming season so close? And then FPL Mikey said, do you think the condensed schedule has been bad for clear thinking? Will we need to adjust for next season? You want to take this one, or you want to start off answering?
Yeah. So if I'm comparing my feeling now to previous seasons, it's strange. And I think it's clouded by me not being happy about my finish, which we just spent a long time discussing. But there is this feeling of resignation that I have. And I think it's part the way I finished the season. But it's also the fatigue that I think would be very natural to be feeling at this point, where this has been a long season. And I think you have to talk yeah. about, it's not just the Premier League. It's not just fantasy. We have all been dealing with truly historic things outside of sport right now. If you're talking about legitimate civil rights movements, you're talking about global pandemics, this is something that maybe you're not thinking about because you're trying to divert your attention to think about fantasy, but it will play into just this insane mental fatigue. So how am I feeling right now? I think I'm feeling, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm trying to put on a happy face for you, Josh, but I think I'm feeling sort of, I'm feeling above it. I'm feeling like I'm okay with what's happened. I feel like I have perspective where I hadn't in previous seasons. I'm not looking for yeah. any player or strategy to blame at this point, and that feels good to me.
Yeah, I'm feeling. My thoughts on this question about the condensed, you know, schedule and how I feel about things. I mean, I don't know that if the condensed schedule is bad for clear thinking or not. I do think that it may not have rewarded yeah, there was a lot of flukiness involved. And I think a lot of it comes down to Man City. And it feels like one team shouldn't be so, like, you know, it's like I want to answer this in a big picture way, but the reality is when you're playing twice a week and there's one team out there that's capable of scoring six goals in literally any match they play, no matter who they're playing, and you have to blindly guess at who is going to be starting for them, it just creates like a kind of chaos, you know, and it's kind of like, and so I feel like that it was hard to think clearly because like my whole strategy seems like it was like, well, what am I going to do with these Man City players, you know? And so, which is like a feeling that you have even in a regular season, but there it's usually a little easier to take the temperature. Okay, Sterling was rested. He's going to start the next three matches.
Yep.
But, you know, but this time around, it was kind of crazy. And, you know, if you guessed right on some of these players, then you could shoot up 20, 30K. If you guessed wrong, you could, you know, it could have a real massive effect on your rank. And, I mean, you saw the highs and lows of that yesterday with Riyad Mahrez, but you know, often like it was, it, you know, I brought in, you know, I free hit and I brought in Raheem Sterling and captained him on my free hit. And you know, he came on in the second half, got 1 point for me as my captain. And it was just, you know, it was just like, there was a kind of element of, a little too much chaos, I think, in these 9 weeks. And so
I agree.
I think it's probably, yeah. So I think it's probably a mistake to draw too many conclusions from your reasoning or the way your thought process, you know, because it was just a little too much chaos.
The eternal form versus fixtures debate. I don't even know how to address that one, given what we saw over the restart, because I think we saw a little bit of everything, and the compressed nature of the restart schedule made it even trickier to follow form, because the compressed schedule made form ignite and burn out more quickly than I think we've seen. I mean, I think we genuinely saw players like Ings carry the form, but then players like Sterling and Aubameyang, like you're saying, you really just had to have them on the right game week. And that was easier said than done. So I think, yeah, the chaos definitely reigned the last few months.
I think, you know, in some ways, there is like an element of like, there's a microcosm. Like in some ways, like some of the same rules did apply, you know, which is basically get Burnley defenders. That was a pretty effective strategy. Final game of the season aside.
Shout out to Eric Peters.
Bring in cheap forwards, you know, who are consistent. You know, I mean, Danny Ings is kind of in that Charlie Austin mold of, you know, he was fairly cheap and he scored 20 goals this season, right? He was a, you know, like, don't overthink it, you know? I mean, I think don't overthink it is like such a, you know, the Man City thing is the one exception, because I think you could, maybe even then, don't overthink it as applies, right? Because you really couldn't. You don't overthink something if the overthinking isn't going to lead you to a, you know, like a correct conclusion, you know, which I guess is the case with that. It's like, why stress out about it if it really is impossible to know, you know,
yeah,
just adjust your mindset.
Yeah. Well put. All right. Next question is from our friend Benno, who asks, what can we do to prevent making the same mistakes next year? I think we've kind of been poking at this question as we've been talking the last half an hour or so, don't you think?
I think so. Yeah. I think, I think just, I think the listening thing that we talked about earlier is really, I'm going to try to listen to what, not just threads, not just like, you know, fun Twitter threads that get 1200 likes or whatever, but like actual like conversations that are taking place among other managers about players, you know, stuff that I maybe was a little too dismissive of this year.
I think that's a good point. Look for the conversations as opposed to the hot takes. And I hope that's what we achieve as friends, Josh, is I hope this podcast is more conversational than take heavy. I mean, I will always have my beloved takes about how short Kepa is and how uninspiring Guendouzi is. I mean, these are not controversial takes, Josh. But
no,
I think maybe that's a good thing to think about is look for the friends, the conversations. Don't look for the takes.
Yeah. Look for the helpers, Brandon. That's what Mr. Rogers always said. Exactly. It's good advice. Yeah. I think the other thing that I'm going to do next year, this is possibly only specific to me. I don't know. But I am not going to transfer in players I don't believe in anymore. This is the other, like, the flip side of only half listening to these conversations, or listening maybe because, like, not listening the right way or something. But sometimes, like,
listening to yourself.
Phil Foden. Yeah, not listening to yourself. I don't know. Like Phil Foden or Sar, even Son earlier this season. I feel like there have been many times when I have brought in a player because everyone was sort of shouting him out, you know, like just saying, like, this is the player to have. This is going to be the captain this game week. And even though I didn't really believe in them as a fantasy asset, I still brought them in anyway, because I just sort of like rode the like excitement about how good they are. And I'm not really going to try to do that the next season, because there's really nothing worse than bringing in somebody you don't believe in and then having them not do well, you know? And then you're like, why am I even playing? You know, it's like, what is the point here? Is it, mm-hmm. Like, why, like, what is the fun of this if I'm just going to like listen to somebody on social media and just bring in that player? Like, I feel like in this podcast, you and I almost never advocate for specific players in that way, because I don't think that it's, I don't think it's what people ultimately want. You know, it's like, I think you just want to just like talk about ideas, talk about players, talk about, you know, like, but I think this idea that like, you've got to bring in X or Y, I think is just, it's not fun. You know, you got to make your own decisions.
Totally. Okay. Sam Danby is next. T-shirt Sam Danby. God, Norway has got some great t-shirt facilities out there. How does the growing community of podcast listeners and supporters change your preparation, commitment, and pressure to do well? Are you feeling the pressure, Josh, with our podcast audience and the interaction we have with them? Does that get to you? Does it get under your skin?
Well, it used to. I think the first couple of years we did the podcast, it absolutely did. And I think I've heard other people talk about this too. People who like do like, you know, fantasy YouTube videos or whatever. And there's like you want to play the right way, you know, because people are like listening to you, and you don't want to get criticized for bringing in somebody, especially if they don't do well, you know, like if you like go off the beaten path and bring in somebody, and then it's like, it's fine. Like, yeah, like you can have a thick skin and brush it off, but it's still like, no one likes to get made fun of, you know, it's just not a pleasant, not pleasant, you know? And so there's like a part of you that's just like, well, I don't want to like deal with that. I don't want to like explain myself, you know? So I'm just going to be a little more sensible here.
Yeah.
And so I've mostly gotten rid of that. I don't know. What about you?
We used to have this conversation. I guess we still kind of have this conversation where I remember we'd get on the mics to record an episode, and you take the bad weekends harder than I do. And you would say, mm-hmm. I just don't know how we can do this podcast. Like we're putting out FPL content and I had a terrible week. Like, who's going to want to listen to this? And I told you, I was like, listen, we won't know that this podcast is successful until we start getting haters who hate on the pod. So I've kind of always been of the mind of, well, this podcast isn't working unless we're getting some negative feedback. And let me be clear out there, this podcast is definitely working. If negative feedback is anything to go by. But that said,
we get just so much less than anybody, though. I don't know if it's because we're Americans or what, but we get the amount of abuse that's out there, and the percentage of it that goes to us is so happily low. Thank goodness.
Precisely. And I mean, I think we do this podcast for many reasons, one of which is it's a small business that we've created and we personally love and invested in it. We find it to be fun. Somewhere in there, though, is that we have met so many listeners. Just look at the meetup that we had in London in early March, where we met more than 100 people at this bar who were just like, it's so great to meet you. I've heard your voice every week. And I think ending our fifth season doing the podcast, what's overwhelming to me is now I feel more connected to the listeners than ever, but in a way in which that has relieved me of that pressure. I feel like we have relationships with listeners where it's not what game week score we're putting up week to week. It is about the conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking about that. I did this Patreon podcast this week, like, you know, one of the kitchen table podcasts for for the patrons. And the first 15 minutes of it, it's like me as my own therapist, you know, it's like just 15 minutes of me like talking about what it means to be good at fantasy and just like sort of going in this like, you know, voyage. And I was like, it's just like the kind of thing like 4 years ago, I couldn't imagine that I would just talk straight, like I would just look at a computer and just talk for an hour without stopping, you know, like it's like there's a kind of comfort level that I think does set in after a while. And so yeah, it was like I agree with you. I think that at some point you sort of like you are who you are, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that even your fantasy game after you know, after 2 or 3 years, you're gonna revert back to the kind of player that you were, you know, because at some point you just want to do the things you want to do, you know. And so the pressure does start to, you know,
yeah, and if you're sickly competitive like the two of us are, you know, we really don't need the thousands of you out there listening to add any more pressure to us doing well. We're happy to apply that pressure to ourselves on our own.
That's true. Jazz got to see Brandon after he's played a chip. It's a different version of you, Brandon. When you've done a wild card or played a chip, you are not always the happiest fantasy manager. There's a lot of pressure on yourself on those match days.
Yeah, no one likes Chip Brandon. Everyone likes.
I think when you found out the maddest you were was when you found out Aubameyang got an assist.
Like, yeah, that's what I was doing. The what do you call it? The just like hindsight, Captain Hindsight, sort of a thing.
And yeah,
totally. All the permutations. Yeah. I mean, definitely. I posted a team. Screenshot to the Slack where I had Van Dijk instead of Robertson, who scored a goal. I had Captain Aubameyang. I had De Bruyne instead of Mahrez. And you're just like,
oh, wow.
You know that feeling? It's a genuine feeling where you just really want to punch yourself in the face. Like, not just like slap yourself, but closed fist punch yourself in the face.
See, this is make fantasy fun again, Brandon. Let's just keep repeating it. Like, we're gonna keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. I don't even know what it means yet. Okay, and when Donald Trump said "Make America Great Again," you think he knew what it meant? Of course not. It's nonsense.
It's provocative.
It's provocative. Make fantasy fun again is our motto. We're gonna figure out what it means later. Okay, once we stick it on a T-shirt and a hat. All right, MFFA, Brandon. All right, Francis says, if you were to pick a team of the season, what would it look like?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about this with just in IRL Premier League with Jordan Henderson winning the Football Writers Award. And I'm not here to bash Jordan Henderson, lovely guy. But no, it just brings an even bigger spotlight onto Kevin De Bruyne, who is well, it's hard for me to say because I don't really watch with any great scrutiny La Liga or basically other powerful leagues. But De Bruyne is just so good.
Yeah.
I just want a one player team. I would actually enjoy a fantasy team in which I was only allowed to have one player and I just fielded Kevin De Bruyne and my captain, and my only decision throughout the entire season was which week am I going to triple captain Kevin. I can't play a bench boost because I don't have any other players on my team. I'm not rotating right. My goalkeeper at all. I've just got one guy. This is not a very useful conversation, but I think you get my point. So that's our starting point. Right. My question for you, Josh, is you have to pick at least two Liverpool players. Who are your two Liverpool players, if not three? I mean, I guess Trent is an automatic.
Yeah, I guess Trent. I mean, the end of the season got a little funny with these two. But, I mean, in the end, you know, the second and third overall players in terms of total points were Salah and Mane. And if you had just kept those two for all 38 weeks, you would have a combined 454 points, right? That is, that's not even counting captaining. If you just captained one of them every time, you know, so just without captains, it's 454 points. I mean, I finished on like 2200 something, right? So like you're sixth of the way there already, you know? And I just think that I listened to an interview a little while back, Brandon, with Fabio Borges. He was the Fantasy Football Scout did an interview with him, and he was talking about, and I guess he has like a kind of a poker background, which I didn't realize. And something that seems like it comes up a lot and really good. It's like, it's a little bit like Magnus Carlsen, I think, too, where it's like, just if you have a background in game strategy, you know, lends itself to any game. Mm-hmm. But he was talking about how he basically, he'll never captain anybody in the bottom half of the table. He very rarely brings transfers in from players at the bottom of the table. You know, it's like, he's just really focused on the best players. And I think that, you know, every now and then you'll find yourself with like some funky team where you've got like, you know, three Newcastle players, two Bournemouth player, you know, it's like a game week one team will be like this sometimes where you'll like, you'll be very focused on the fixtures, you know, and you'll have like all of these kind of middle bottom half of the table players. And in the end, it's like, you just have to think about it all through a longer lens. And if you had just had De Bruyne, Salah, Mane and Van Dijk all season, and just rode out the swings with them. And, you know, Trent actually played all 38 weeks this season. He didn't start, I think, two of the matches, maybe three, but he actually played in all 38 of them. And, you know, obviously, I think Sadio Mane, he missed maybe, I guess he had a little injury where he missed two. I think even in those cases, it wasn't like, the famous kind of triple captain moment where he got injured in game week 24. But I think he actually only missed one game week after that because it was a double game week. Mm-hmm. You know, if you had just ridden those, and Salah had that kind of ankle injury, but even then he really didn't miss, just kind of on and off matches here and there. So if you had just treated those like blue chip stocks, and you were just like, I'm not going to move them. I'm not going to, unless they like break their leg, I'm just going to ride out the rotation, ride out the swings, and just have those three players. I feel like I would have had a significantly better season. And I also would have had a lot less stress in terms of the decisions I was making.
There is a temptation to play it perfectly, right? If you're going to win the game, you have to play it perfectly. Meaning, these blue chip players, as you say, Salah, Mane, if you just put them in your team and never move them. But there is always the temptation to believe that you're smart enough to drop them during the right week to get a different player during the right week. Sometimes you can pull that off, but the odds are you're not going to pull it off. The odds of you doing it throughout an entire 38 game week season are basically zero. So, is that making fantasy fun again, though? I don't know.
Here's like the other way to think about it, right? We're talking about De Bruyne, Salah, Mane, Trent. Okay, let's say those were our four blue chip players. That's it. That's 4 out of 15. 4 out of 15 players, right? So the other 11 are, you can mix it up. You can, you know, and other people will be dropping. You know, it's not going to be the same as everybody else. Other people will be dropping and adding those players in. That's in very, you know, they'll be doing the kind of normal style. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and because I look at the other defenders, Robertson, Van Dijk, Doherty, those are all players that you can move in and out of your team. You know, Pope, okay, sure, maybe. But you can make an argument probably for some promoted keepers next season. Let's see. I look at the forwards. To me, they're all rotatable. All of them, just up and down.
If this season's going to be remembered for anything, it will be for the mid-priced striker. Danny Ings and Jimenez carried the striker position for most of the season. I think that's right. And to your point, that is a price range where you're more free to move it around.
Yeah, and even Aubameyang and Rashford not Aubameyang, Vardy and Rashford weren't that expensive. I think Vardy started the season at $9 million. You know, just 0.5 more than Giroud, Brandon.
Sensational player, Giroud.
What a finish! Like what a great story.
Well, obviously Giroud is. Giroud was not helped by the fact that Tammy Abraham was like torching defenses, beating all of his stats. It was improbable form for Tammy, and it was going to fall away. But Giroud, he's made a career of this, just waiting for his moment to shine. And he's the classic "I'm ready, boss" sort of a player.
Yeah. No goals until game week 27, and then he scored 8 in the final 11 game weeks. So
yeah.
Pretty impressive. And we even got to see a proper Giroud starfish, Brandon. That was fun too.
I live for it.
Yeah, me too. Even though I wanted him to score because I had him on my free hit team, just to see the Giroud starfish up in real time was such a delight. All right, a couple more questions here. The Dark Lord says, okay, these are three questions. Let's try to do it rapid fire.
Okay.
Who is the first name in your team sheet? Who is one to watch, and who is a differential punt for next season? So first player on, one player to watch, and an upside pick for next season.
first name on my team sheet. Well, so many questions about what's going to happen with Manchester City during this very short break. I mean, the assumption is nothing. You know, maybe they'll win the Champions League, but probably the big players aren't going anywhere. So Kevin De Bruyne, I think, he is the most solid coming out of the season in that improbable FPL returns only looks like he's gaining momentum. Now, Salah's kind of kept up in his form to justify his price. Kevin De Bruyne is going to be expensive. He's probably going to be 11.5, maybe even 12. Would you just think they would go as far as 12 at the start of the season?
Top scorer in the game this season with 251 points, 13 goals, 23 assists. I mean, I think he does. I think he probably does get. He started what at 10? He's at 9.5. So I think 11.5 minimum, probably 12.
I think he just has to be the first name in my team sheet, not surprisingly, for a make fantasy fun again. This is a player that I love, and I love watching him. If he doesn't post FPL returns, at least I got to watch him, and that's okay. And I won't regret having him in my team. So he's the first
Without checking, Brandon, do you know? So I said, 13 goals, 23 assists last season. How many goals and assists did he have in the season before that? Do you recall?
The season before this current season?
Yeah, it's the 18-19
season. Yeah, he was injured for a lot of that season. So two goals and six assists?
Two goals and three assists.
Yeah.
Is that kind of shockingly low? That's Mesut Ozil level returns right there.
He was basically injured for that entire season. I think if you look one more season before, do you have those numbers up?
I know. I started to go look at Mesut Ozil because I wanted to laugh at how he had done this year. Mesut Ozil, one goal, three assists this season. 5-3 the season before that. Okay, that's not too bad. All right. So anyway, back to your one to watch, Brandon. Who's one to watch?
Okay, one to watch is definitely okay. I have to bring up the Wolves team. I think you're already going to know who I'm talking about. Yes, it was Podence. Podence priced at 5.0 to start. Daniel Castello Podence. This guy looked like the real deal. He was a January signing for Wolves, so we didn't really talk much about him. I think the expectation is we would have learned more about him if he was the summer signing. But man, did he look good when he came on. He got a proper start in three matches, Everton, Burnley, and Palace.
Yep.
I mean, just one goal and one assist on those returns, but he looks like a really classy player. And Wolves are just crying out for more players who can carry the goal-scoring weight. He'll be involved.
I was going to agree with you. I mean, I feel like you need somebody like somebody has to work with Moutinho and Neves to bring the ball forward. You know, right now it's Jimenez has been asked to do a lot of work. And assuming he even stays. I actually, Podence would be my player to watch too. And they gave the number 10, which is usually a sign of, they see him as a real long-term.
We were talking about this a couple weeks ago about like the importance of Bruno and how every team now needs a Bruno. And what's stark about Wolves is that they've never had a player for the hole. They've never been a player playing between that double pivot and Jimenez, which is why he does all that work that you're mentioning. So it's true. So he's the one to watch. And then the differential punt. Okay. Here's a chance for me to just indulge. Okay, Josh.
Okay. Yeah.
And I told somebody that I wasn't going to indulge this talk before game week 38. Some smart, cheeky listener out there was like, Che Adams, he's finally has a goal in the Premier League. Would you consider him? Would you consider him for game week 38? And I was just like, absolutely 100% no. I will not condone this at all.
You wouldn't be able to record the pod if you had brought in Adams and he'd gotten 1 point or something. You would need like a week to check that off.
Yeah, but I mean, it's I'm having a bit of a laugh, but sometimes this is what it takes for players. They just need a little bit of taste of blood in their mouth. And It was clear that Che Adams had a great record in the championship when he came up, and then it's easy to say, well, he's not cut out for the Premier League. And I think Southampton is a really tough team to play in, because if you go back to what Fabio Borges was saying about, I'm not going to focus on players on teams in the lower half of the table. And Southampton struggled to get out of that relegation territory for the first half of the season. And they finally found their form, and you could just see the whole team wasn't working. So if they make the right signings, if Che Adams and Danny Ings are both healthy over this break and come back, I think he could be an interesting bargain third striker, especially if the fixtures are set up nicely for Southampton at the start of the season.
I'm just dying to see you put Che Adams in your team.
Watch me. I won't condone it. I'll do it.
I'll go with Pons as the player to watch. The first player on my team sheet, I think that there's a pretty good chance that Man City does not start in game week one, and that because of the Champions League, if they, I think they have an advantage over Real Madrid, I believe, and they're they're going to the second leg. And I think they have two goals or something like that. I can't remember, but it's a home match.
I don't recall.
So let's assume. Yeah, but yeah, it's likely that they advance reasonably far in the Champions League, possibly win it. I think they have a shot. And then they won't start until, I don't even know, game week two or three, maybe. So in that case, I'll go with Trent Alexander-Arnold. Boring answer, but I think he is. The interesting question is, whether he just comes in at like an insane price that just makes him impossible to own.
Sorry, is this your differential punt, Trent?
No, this is my. I didn't name my first player. I didn't name the first player in. Yeah, this is actually a question that somebody asked me on Twitter. I forgot who it was now. Sorry to whoever asked it, but they were like, "Could we see Trent at 10 million
this season?" And it's too high.
I think it was Leighton Baines. I think he is the highest player.
8.5? Did he come in at 8.5 one season?
He came in at 8. He came in at 8 million in the 2011-2012 season. That was after a 5-goal, 11-assist season. He came in at 8 million. So Trent, really blew that out of the water this season. I think 8 is I can't actually imagine him going lower than 8. Like if he comes at 7.5, he's going to be 60% owned. I mean, they have to put him at least 8, I think.
I completely agree.
And then at 8, if he's at 8 and like Robertson's at like 6.5 or something, or I don't know, they always price the player right at the spot that like makes you a little nervous, mm-hmm. And so I think that 8 is about right. But let's say for now that he comes in at 8. He'll probably still make it my team. It depends on fixtures and all that stuff. And then the upside player to watch, I'll go a little off the board here. And I'll say Kieran Tierney, who is Arsenal have looked. I know they conceded 2 against Watford yesterday, but they've looked considerably better at the back since Arteta's taken over. And he kind of looks like the player they thought they were getting. He had battle injuries kind of the whole season. But I was just looking a minute ago. He's been a more consistent. He's played in every match going back to game week 31 and has picked up, one goal and two assists just in the last 6 game weeks. So super attacking. That was kind of his reputation coming in too. There was a lot of excitement when he was signed.
Yeah, he was there was a competition in Scotland for left back with him and Andy Robertson, and that was the issue of like, why haven't you seen or heard from Tierney? It's well because Andy Robertson's been cashing his paychecks for the last 5 years. So now that Tierney's found his position and is healthy in a big club like Arsenal, big club scare quotes, then I think you're right.
Especially if the price is right, if he comes in at like 5 million, I think he came at 5.5 this year, but I think I don't know if they can keep him at 5.5 based on the track record of missing a ton of matches and 1 goal and 2 assists. So he might be a player to watch. All right, 2 more questions, Brandon. First one is from Boston Prof. He said, how did your strategy and team structure change over the season as compared to what you intended at the start? If I remember correctly, the big theme was big at the back last fall. And ended up being Trent plus cheap defenders.
Yeah.
Given this, what do you think will be your approach going into next season?
I think I am going to take that lesson with me into the start of next season. Clean sheets were really difficult to call for the longest time, and it was all about attacking results for your defenders, which, you know, is the popularity of Trent. And what we talked about a lot heading into the restart was, well, just go for center backs because we expect to see a lot of rotation and center backs right. are immune to that. And those were really tough picks too, because you're not getting attacking returns for them, and clean sheets are really tough. You just need to find that one team like Burnley. I think this season reminded us of the value of goalkeepers and defenders. So I can mm-hmm. see, I would expect I'm going to be using that strategy at the start of next season and really trying to pack it in to the midfield. Pack it into the midfield. Yeah. That could be misinterpreted. I'm going to try and put a lot of my money into my midfield.
Yeah.
And yeah. hopefully, well, so Chelsea is just going to be such an interesting team fantasy-wise because of the signings that they have made and are purported to make before the start of next season. So it's like, what is Timo Werner's price going to be? What is Kai Havertz's price going to be? I'm blanking on the name of the really exciting other midfielder that is already in training with them. I think it's just all about midfielders for me next season. And, you know, if they price somebody like Timo Werner at 9 million, then maybe he fulfills that Jimenez role where it's like my highest priced striker is the best 9 million striker available.
There's no way he's coming in at 9 million. He's like Diego Costa level. Like he's going to be awesome. I think he's going to come in at 10 at the lowest. I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll see. But and this actually, it's funny because it gets right into the next question, which is
how much is Timo Werner going to cost?
Yeah. Just to answer my answer to Boston Brown's question is just that it's that blue chip stock answer, which is just being a little more patient with my knowing which players on my team are the best and then just not messing with them, like just writing out the rotation, writing out all that stuff. Did not do that nearly enough this year. Kept swaying in the wind, you know, bringing in different 11 and 12 million players. And that's just not the right strategy, I think. So Jan Horvath says, who are the new signings that you're most looking forward to? He says, Werner at Chelsea, Lallana at Brighton. I like that. It's a little off the board. Or Jadon Sancho at United, if it happens. So rumored or real life, Brandon, which player are you most excited to see next year?
This is a good question. We were talking a lot. Jazz, who we watched Game Week 38 with, is a massive Manchester United fan. And we were talking about how does the lineup change for United if and when Sancho comes in and who loses out, who's the purest striker, who's able to play out wide, and Rashford and Greenwood and Martial and all that. So I'm really excited about the prospect of Sancho, but the reason I have this whole preamble is United have a weird manager, and I think they hit upon some really interesting chemistry with that particular starting 11. You change it, and does it all fall to pieces? I don't know. Probably not. They're still a really good team. But I think just to see United with Sancho and priced right, I think he would be a great game week one. It's hard to call a blooded player like Sancho a punt or an upside pick, but I think he could be one where you just go for him. Game one, though, that is starting to remind me of when Memphis Depay came in to Manchester United under Louis van Gaal, and you're like, oh man, this guy is like he was also a left-sided flair attacking player, and he was a disaster. Probably won't be the same with Sancho, but curious to see how that works out.
I think that'll be interesting. Sancho, you know, if he joins, I guess there was a 100 million bid that was just rejected today. I think that I'm with you, because I mean Man United is like they have no bench depth. It's kind of like it's a little bit like Liverpool a couple seasons ago, that season when they made the Champions League final and lost. There's just when they had to bring on, when Salah got injured and they had to bring on Oxlade-Chamberlain, and it was just like, or maybe not even with him. He may have been injured. I can't. Regardless, it was like they didn't quite have it yet, and it feels like Man United's in that spot right now where the starting 11 gives you a lot of confidence, and well, maybe Luke Shaw side, you know, but you know, you feel like there's a lot to like about them, and that they, you know, they just added one or two more really big players. They could be really, I mean, Chelsea's like that too. I mean, I feel like, yeah, I'm just repeating you because I agree with you.
Well, yeah. The player yeah, I did want to mention was Hakim Ziyech, who I'm sure everyone was just shouting, right, into their AirPods, Hakim Ziyech's name, but, right, especially Chancer Dan, on Twitter, who I like hang on his every word on Twitter. I think he's a really fun and interesting guy. He was just saying, watch out for Ziyech. He is a true leader and baller on the pitch, and he could be breaking the lines every match and getting Sterling-esque goals.
Yeah, really, and yeah, yep, and he'll be in that Willian. So you'll have him on the right, in that Willian spot. You'll have Pulisic on the left. You'll have Timo Werner on the center, and then Kai Havertz possibly like in the hole or something,
yeah,
like that.
That's, yeah,
it's a pretty insane team.
Sounds,
yeah,
and Kurt Zuma, awesome, in the back.
And Karen Zoom in the back. Yep. Hey, as long as they have Azpilicueta, like, doesn't matter. It's like he's like their Virgil van Dijk, or it's just like he's just gonna clean up every mess. Like somehow he's, yeah, you know, he's just always there.
Yep.
All right. All right. Let's take a quick break, and we'll get back and we'll wrap up this season wrap up pod.
Wrap it up.
All right, thus concludes the 2019-20 fantasy campaign. The Premier League season is done. So is our podcast for this season. We are fully expecting the fantasy game to get back in the middle of August, August 12th, August 20th. Who knows? We are not privy to any inside information. We are as in the dark as anybody else. I can't imagine it happens. You know, basically, you know, they can't really make any schedules until the promoted teams happen, right? So we have at least a week or so,
yeah,
there. But then it usually does take a week or two to make the schedule. But it's not like they just can like punch into a computer. There's often lots of other things that have to be factored into police and make sure there's no events in the area, and just, you know, I think like one issue sort of like the whole you know, domino set falls, you know, so it does take a while to make the schedule. So anyway, it's a long way of saying that it looks like we expect to be off for a couple of weeks, and then to be back in the middle of August with very frequent, I would say, preseason pods. We're both, yeah, working from home. There's nothing going on. I think that we'll be potting with some you know, serious regularity in the lead up to the season. The season kicks off, I believe it's September 12th. I'm not mistaken. I think it's the Friday,
yeah, that's correct,
the traditional Friday kickoff now. So the season kicks out in about 6 weeks, which I think is, I mean, considering we had 3 months off in the spring, I don't feel like I don't need 3 months off again. 6 weeks feels about right. As a
fantasy, yeah, we're just not going to spend this 6 weeks podcasting about our favorite sports movies and things like that. We can just actually, yeah, take a real break.
Once was enough.
Cast your mind back, Josh, to the Premier League teasing the launch of the FPL game for this past season. And do you remember the player who the first player price that, yes, was announced?
Yes, I do. Of course, now I'm going to forget his name. That blonde Newcastle player.
Yeah, Matt Ritchie.
Matt Ritchie, of course. Yeah. For whatever reason, Matt Ritchie was the first player price announced. It must be like a Newcastle fan at Premier League headquarters.
It created quite a stir, let me tell you.
Yeah, what let's actually just to wrap things. This is a perfect way to end it the way it began, Brandon. Matt Ritchie finished down 0.2 million from his starting price. Two goals, one assist, injured most of the year. And he did play in a position a lot though. So credit to, yeah,
what
credit
a story.
What a story. All right. So this is a long way of saying we'll be gone for about 2 weeks, maybe a little bit longer, but I would say the day within an hour of the game being launched, we'll be back up, with a podcast. So, once the Premier League and fantasy is back, so are we. We may even do a price prediction podcast like we've done in the past too. So we'll see how bored we get. So we will be back soon. Just one final thank you though to, I mean, everyone who listens to the podcast, everyone who's written a review, everyone who's ordered anything from the Always Changing Shop, and a special shout out to all of our Patreon supporters, some of whom have been supporting the podcast for, you know, multiple years now, you know, and
incredible.
And thank you to, you know, Jim Payne and Mike DiPietro and some of our, you know, early Trevor Ingerson, you know, some of our earliest supporters. So thank you, everybody. I know this is getting a little long winded, but Brendan, do you want to thank our producer patrons one last time?
Please? Absolutely. We love our producers, Trevor Ingerson, Mike DiPietro, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian T, Da Big Gaffer, Bobas Kuhn, Jeff Husby. Jeff Husby with a masterful 108 pointer in game week 38. Ben Grant, James Holland, Jazz Binning, Dave Wagner, Lodahl, Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Frederick Kian-Gransky, Travis West, Alan Creasy, Victor Forberg-Skogain, Paul Hertzig, Kaya Christine Lalang, Peter Bodektel, Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markov, FPLmerch.com, James Conroy, Brandon B., Paul Scanlon, Kieran Screeton, and James Hurd. And Josh, you said it. If Patreon's not your thing, but you just want to cap off the season with a chef's kiss and a thank you to Always Cheating, feel free to find us on Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and review. That really does help the pod. Also, just subscribe. If you're not already subscribed and you're concerned, when is Always Cheating going to get back? Just subscribe and we'll automatically populate your podcast app of choice. We're on Spotify, yeah. Google Play, Stitcher, everywhere you get your podcasts. And that's pretty much it. Alwayscheating.com. Yeah. That's the website.
And that's it. 13 months. That was fun. Look forward to another one. No wild cards in Game Week 3 this season. That's my pledge. All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Poker forever.